welcome to this webinar. What are we going to talk about this morning? Well, on our agenda, first of all, I've got a very quick intro on what is the Internet of Things. No worries, I'm not going to make use of any complex slides quoting sources from Gartner or IDC that are trying to explain what IoT is all about. No, we're going to keep it plain and simple. Once we've got an idea what IoT is, we're going to take a look a little bit at the cloud side of things. We're going to talk about the features that you can find in Azure that will allow you to build an IoT solution. But of course, that is, I think, a most important topic for today in this webinar. We're focusing as well on what's happening on the devices side, to be more precise, with Windows 10 that you can now run on very small devices such as the Raspberry Pi as well. So, first of all, what's the Internet of Things? At least what is my definition of the Internet of Things? People that know me, they probably know that I'm coming from the far east of Belgium, where they like to put things very straightforward, very basic. And for me, the Internet of Things is, well, basically consisting of two things, two parts in our definition, the Internet and things. The things part is all about devices. We are going to have devices in our solution that are going to provide either input and or output to our IoT system. Input can be, well, traditional input like mouse, keyboard, but can also be sensor input. Imagine that you've got a device that is hooked up to a temperature sensor that is going to allow you to measure temperatures in a room. That is also being considered as input. Output can also be a screen, but can also be, for example, something that you make happen in the physical world, like turning on a light, opening up a valve, stuff like that. The internet part in that definition is all about cloud services. Those cloud services are going to provide functionality to the devices. Those cloud services, of course, are all going to allow as well those devices to communicate with the cloud and communicate with each other. What kind of services do we need to think about? Well, can be pretty straightforward. If our IoT solution is capturing sensor data, maybe we would like to store that sensor data in a database. So we need to, we can have a service that provides us storage, or we can have services that provide analytics capabilities, visualization capabilities, and so forth. So basically, the Internet of Things is about devices that provide input and or output, and that can be connected both to each other as well as to the cloud services that provide some functionality to our system. Now, when we talk about the Internet of Things, very often you will hear that nowadays pretty much everything is called the Internet of Things. And there is a big hype that is going on, and everything that is only slightly related to the Internet of Things is going to be mentioned in that context. Although that I believe that the hype is way too big, getting way too big nowadays. I do believe that the reasons why the Internet of Things is such a big hype, well, the reasons are actually true. IoT is at an inflection point as we speak, and there are a couple of very good reasons why the Internet of Things is as big as it is today. And I've put those reasons on the slide over here. First reason I think is pretty obvious. Hardware is getting cheaper, I think, like every day. If you think about, for example, the Raspberry Pi that you can find for, what is it, 35 euros. You can buy an Arduino board, an official one, for 20 euros. And if you go on eBay and check the internet sites in China, for example, very often you will find a development board for around a couple of US dollars, including shipping. Why is that important in the context of an IoT solution? Well, that is going to give you the opportunity to have a lot of devices in the field, a lot of devices that are connected to your IoT system. If hardware would have been very expensive, then scaling to a lot of devices, of course, is not an option due to the price issue. Second reason is that connectivity is nowadays pretty much everywhere. Good example to give is if you would open up your Wi-Fi connection settings in Windows or whatever operating system that you're using. Probably there are a bunch of Wi-Fi networks that you can connect to, and it's not only Wi-Fi, of course, also 3G connections are pretty much everywhere, and they're also affordable. Why is that interesting in the context of an IoT solution? Well, that's going to allow your devices, your many devices, to connect to our cloud services over an internet connection, for example. Third reason, also quite interesting, development is very easy nowadays. What do I mean with development? Well, actually building the IoT solution, putting all the code together, and not only writing the code is very easy nowadays. But also, well, just reusing building blocks that we've got, for example, in Azure. Typical challenges that you will need to solve in IoT solutions. Very often, other people have already solved them, and you can just reuse them instead of reinventing the wheel. That means that in a very short time span, you can really get going, build up your base IoT solution, and already have some output, already have some results. So that can be a very, very quick cycle. Fourth reason is more, let's say, from the business side. You see it over there, huge benefits, fuel demand. Very often, when you go and talk to your customer about IoT solutions, or when you're trying to sell IoT solutions to your boss, well, those people, those business people, see direct value of the stuff that you're trying to sell. A typical example is what we call predictive maintenance. So when you do predictive maintenance, you're going to make sure, or you're at least going to try to prevent that certain devices are going to go down. Think about projectors that we've got in cinema rooms, for example. And when you are able to predict when there is going to be an issue in the future, of course, you're not going to let it fail, you're not going to let the issue happen. You can schedule a maintenance, and that's of an immediate value for your business, for your customer, because you will not have any downtime and so forth. Fifth reason why I think that IoT is such a big thing nowadays. It's well, the reason we called it new innovative scenarios. It's something that I love talking about. And when you build IoT solutions, when you think about IoT solutions, very often you can think about scenarios that were not possible to build in the past because of the reasons that we didn't have sufficient devices, we didn't have sufficient compute capacity, and so forth. And to illustrate that, we actually have a real reference case at Microsoft, which we call the Internet of Cows. And it's actually a real company that that instrumented at a certain point in time their cows with sensors that could count the number of steps that those cows were doing like every day. And you may be wondering why is that interesting to know? Well, it turns out that when you calculate the number of steps that a cow does like every day, you can quite precisely predict when it is a good time to put a male cow together with a female cow, and hoping that you will get a baby cow out of that. I believe it's up to your imagination what I mean. And even more, when you are able to well measure the steps that a cow does like every day, and you do that very precisely, you can actually predict the moment when in time when it is a good time to put a female cow next to a male cow, and as a result, have a female cow as well, baby female cow that is. And that's of course important if your business is about, well, producing milk. Just an example well, to illustrate that, well, with that kind of sensors, with that kind of technology, you can predict stuff that you couldn't dream to predict in the past. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about devices. Devices that are connected to sensors, devices that are going to provide input-output to our IoT system. There are many, many different types of devices, and to bring some order in the chaos, let's say, what we try to do is we try to put all those different types of devices into a couple of categories, a couple of classes of devices, as it's being called over here on this slide. First of all, we've got a class of devices that we call the standard devices, which resemble quite well the device that you probably have in front of you. You probably have like a desktop or a laptop computer where you're following this meeting. Think about those kind of devices being worked in into a point of sales terminal or into a cash machine, something like that. If we go a bit smaller, we've got the class of devices that we call the mobile devices. They correspond quite well to the form factor that you know as a tablet or a phone. And basically the difference between the standard devices and the mobile devices is that, well, those mobile devices can be moved around. Think, for example, about a factory worker that is having a tablet strapped to his wrist, and he's walking in the factory doing all kind of measurements, stuff like that. If you go even smaller, we've got the small class of devices, and that are typically devices that have limited input-output capabilities. For example, very small screens or only a couple of buttons that you can press. And you can find those examples nowadays in, let's say, a printer or in an internet router. And that kind of devices, of course, have a very specific task. They need to print on paper, or they need to distribute your Wi-Fi signal and so forth. We can go even smaller, and then we're talking about the micro devices. And those micro devices, typically their only role is to collect sensor data and pass along that sensor data to the cloud, to our storage system, for example. Now, why do we differentiate in those classes of devices? Well, from the Microsoft side, for every class of device, we had in the past a version of Windows that was running on that specific class of device. For example, we had Windows Embedded Industry, Windows Embedded Handheld, Windows Embedded Compact, and then the .NET Micro framework running on the micro devices. Today, we still have Windows running on most of those different types of devices, but we don't differentiate that much anymore in the different flavors of Windows, because now with Windows 10, on pretty much every class of device, you can run that single version of Windows, which is actually pretty cool. This is a slide that you probably have seen in some kind of variations already a couple of times if you're following Microsoft. But this is to actually explain to you that with Windows 10, we really have one core operating system with one application development platform that is going to allow you to build applications for Windows desktops, tablets, Windows Phone, Xbox, but also IoT devices. And that's the interesting part, of course, for today. As I already mentioned, a bunch of different form factors going from very big devices, traditional devices, to very small devices, the IoT devices that we've got at the right-hand side of this slide. The very cool thing for you as a developer is the fact that, well, with only one application, without changing any line in your code, you can have your application running on every form factor that you see over here on this slide. And that's, of course, because of the fact that we've got our Windows Universal Application Platform that is going to allow you to have that single application being deployed to pretty much any form factor that you can desire. To focus already a little bit on the devices side, which are the devices on which you can run Windows 10 already today, and with that I mean, of course, the IoT devices. Well, in the past we already announced that we can run on the Raspberry Pi 2, which is a very popular development board. I've got one lying next to me as well, and I will be showing my demos later on today with Windows 10 running on the Raspberry Pi 2. But we also have, for example, the Dragon Board from Intel. We've got the Middleboard Max from Qualcomm. So there are some more devices on which you can run Windows 10 pretty easily, because it's completely supported by Microsoft. Now, talking about IoT without talking about the cloud services is very difficult. That's why I thought it would be interesting to present you, you guys this slide that shows you a very typical IoT architecture. I'm not going to dive into too much details on how you can implement this thing completely from scratch in Azure. That would take too much time, and it's a little bit of out of scope for this meeting, of course. But I do think it's important to know, at least from a high level perspective, what's happening in the cloud services, what are the important components that you need to have in your IoT solution to make it a reality. How do you need to read this slide? Well, at the left-hand side, we've got a block that we call our event producers. That is petty much everything that can generate event data. Think of it as sensor data, maybe to make it simple at this point in time. Can be our IoT devices, can be also other applications, of course. Completely at the right-hand side of the slide, we've got the stuff that we might want to do with the data that the event producers are giving us. Maybe we would like to summarize the data and put it on a dashboard. Maybe we would like to have it in Excel. Maybe we would like to, well, take action based on the data that we captured. Or maybe we would like to analyze it with kind of a big data solution on Hadoop, for example. Now, of course, you cannot go straight from the event producers to the presentation and action section at the right-hand side. We need to have some building blocks in between. And probably the most important, one of the most important building blocks that you will have in your IoT architecture is the first cycle circle that you see over there. It's the event hubs thing. Event hubs is a feature, a component better, from Azure that is basically a hyperscale ingestion service. So by using event hubs, you can make it very easy to capture a very large number of events. And when I say a large number of events, I'm really talking about gigabytes of data that is being sent to your IoT solution per second. So it's very easy to scale to those extreme scenarios by making use of event hubs. Now your event producers can connect to such an event hub either directly, or they can go through what is being called a gateway. And a gateway can be a field gateway that is typically a physical device that is sitting close to your IoT devices that can make, for example, a translation between a protocol that your IoT device can speak and a protocol that, in this case, the event hub can speak. The gateway can also be put in the cloud, and then we're actually talking about a cloud, a gateway, or a web API for that sake. Now, once we've got our data captured, of course, we would like to analyze our data a bit, temper our data a bit, format the data, and so forth. Event Hub is not going to do that. The second component that you need to have in play in your typical IoT solution is the second circle that you see on the slide. It's called Stream Analytics. And Stream Analytics in Azure is basically a service that is our implementation of what is in general called stream processing. Now, stream processing is going to allow you to analyze data that is not at rest in a database, for example, but that is in movement. That is like a stream of data that you would like to analyze. And you will see that happening quite a lot, of course, in IoT scenarios where you've got data in a stream that is coming in from sensors, from devices, and so forth. Event hub stream analytics are not long-term storage. If you would like to store the result of your hard work, you probably are going to put that result that comes out of a stream analytics job in a database or on blob storage or on a service bus or on whatever, so it can be used by the presentation and action layer at the right end of this slide. So this is, from a high level perspective, a very typical IoT architecture. And what I would like to do next is, well, show you how this can look like in Azure. Once again, I'm not going to build it up completely from scratch, just want to give you an idea how it can look like. And to do so, what I'm going to do is I'm going to present my desktop. And hope you guys will be able to see that in a second. I don't know, Louis, if you're still in the call. Can you see my desktop?
Perfectly.
Thank you, Louis. So what you see over here in my browser is my Azure dashboard. The first component that I can show you that we talked about is the event hub, which is actually sitting in this section that is called Service Bus. Where is it? Over here. I've got already prepared an event hub that is sitting over here, which is called IoT Camp. You can see this is an event hub. What are the things that you can configure on your event hub? Well, not that much. You can specify what is the retention period of your event hub, and you can define what we call the number of partitions in our event hub, and the number of partitions will have an impact on the scale, of course, of how many, the number of events that you can capture, like per second. There's nothing to show for the rest about this event hub. Remember, this guy is responsible for capturing the sensor data that we're sending from our IoT devices, for example. Second building block that I can show you is over here, the stream analytics part. I've got one stream analytics job where I've defined an input that will point to the event type that we just saw. I've got an output that will send the output data to a database. And then the most important part in the middle, I've got a query that will be executed on the stream of data that is being generated by your input, of course. As you can see, the query looks pretty familiar if you're used to writing SQL select statements. There's only a special thing happening at the end where I've got a thing that's called the tumbling window. This is a thing that you cannot find in plain SQL, let's say, but this is a feature that is being added by the stream analytics processing. And it's going to allow you to, well, summarize events, in this case, in tumbling windows of 1 second. So multiple input events can be reduced to one output event to calculate, for example, averages, minimum, maximum values, that kind of stuff. Final thing that I need to show you is where the data eventually goes to. In my demo scenario, I have created a mobile service which has a database behind it that contains one table called sensor values, where you will see the columns that we all also had, of course, in our outputs defined, sorry, in our query defined of our stream analytics job. You can see in my database I already have some sensor values stored. I'm going to clean this database so I can prove to you that this is really going to be filled with some real data in just a second. Now, I understand that this database is not that interesting to look at. That's why I also created a small website, which is running on iotcampbelux.azurewebsites.net, that is showing a live chart of sensor data that is sent to my IoT system. So later on today, we will actually see some real values popping up over here. And while you guys are watching this demo, I can already invite you to navigate to this website as well, to go to iotcampbelux.azurewebsites.net. Why is that? Well, I'm going to ask you guys to generate some sensor data for me. And you can do that by, well, navigating to the website, iotcampbelux.azurewebsites.net, and then clicking over there on the button that is called Sensor Demo. Now, what is this thing going to do? Well, this sensor demo is basically a small web page that is going to capture information from my gyroscope inside my laptop in this case, and is going to send that sensor data off to the infrastructure that we just discussed. So if everything goes okay, you guys are now sending sensor data to my IoT system, and if I give it a couple of seconds, I will actually see all your sensor data flowing in. You'll see this like a live chart. It's easier if you open up that sensor demo page on a phone, then you can actually very easily change your orientation of your device. I see some people that are probably turning around their phones, but this is the live data that is flowing in. Feel free to keep up that page. I will revert back to it and ask you to move again somewhat later on today. And we're actually going to we'll show this data also in a Windows 10 application. But that is my IoT solution, let's say. Allow me to quickly switch back to my slide deck. My slide deck. That's this one. And let's continue with the presentation. another thing that I wanted to mention about the IoT stuff that we've got in Azure, I showed you all the individual building blocks of a typical IoT architecture by using Trim Analytics, by using an event app and a database and so forth. Know that we now have in Azure a thing that's called the Azure IoT Suite, which is going to allow you to create such an infrastructure by just making use of a couple of mouse clicks and a couple of things that you need to fill out. End result is pretty much the same, but that's also quite an interesting thing that we now have in Azure. Now it's time to focus on the Windows 10 thing, or how can we write code for IoT devices that are running Windows 10. Once again, this is a slide that you may have seen a couple of times already, focusing on the evolution that we had coming from Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 and how we ended up on Windows 10. Well, the slide that you see over here is basically telling the same story, but for our Windows embedded operating systems. You may know that in the past we had Windows Embedded Standard, we had Windows Embedded Handheld and so forth, which were originating from a bunch of operating systems in the past. And notice that all of those operating systems are being replaced by the thing that we now have, Windows 10. So one Windows to rule them all. What is important to know about that Windows 10 in the context of the Internet of Things? Well, we've got an edition of Windows 10 that we call Windows 10 IoT. It's like a flavor of Windows that we built, which is really geared towards, well, IoT devices. Important to know that that Windows 10 IoT still makes use of the same Windows platform, so it's still the same base of the operating system that you've got running on your desktop or on your phone. It's making use of the same application development model, it's making use of the same drivers, it's making use of the same user interface, making use of the same security mechanisms that we've got in place. Also the manageability aspect of Windows 10 is the same. And of course you can make use of the same connectivity features that you know in the normal Windows 10. Now, for that Windows 10 IoT, we've got three editions that I need to talk about. And those three editions differ quite a bit when we talk about, well, the specifications that you need and the type of devices on which you can run the Windows 10 IoT editions. If we start at the top, we see that we've got a Windows 10 IoT that is called Windows 10 IoT for industry devices. And that's basically an operating system that you can compare perfectly well with the Windows 10 that you've got on your laptop or on your desktop, which is having a bit more features geared towards IoT scenarios. So it's going to allow you to run one application in a kiosk mode and so forth. It's going to allow you to customize the Windows experience a bit more to tailor to your need and your solution. Windows 10 IoT for industry devices can run on a minimum a machine that has a minimum 1 gigabyte of RAM, 16 gigabyte of storage, and it's running on Intel CPUs. If we check out the operating system below, then we've got Windows 10 IoT for mobile devices, which is basically the operating system, the Windows 10 operating system that we've got for phones, but then applied for IoT devices. So that means that it runs on ARM CPUs, minimum specs as well, 0.5 gigabyte of RAM, 4 gigabyte of storage. And then we've got the new one, which is called Windows 10 IoT Core, which is the smallest version of Windows 10, which runs both on Intel and ARM CPUs. You only need to have 256 megabyte of RAM and 2 gigabyte of storage. So that can run on really, really small devices. Now, a big differentiator between Windows 10 IoT Core and Windows 10 IoT for mobile devices and industry devices is the fact that Windows 10 IoT Core does not come with what we call a shell. It doesn't have a start menu, that is. It doesn't come with the Windows application. It doesn't come with a store. The goal is really that you as a developer build an application and deploy it to Windows 10 IoT Core. The user, when a user would install Windows 10 IoT Core on a machine, out of itself, it's not going to do anything that machine. You really need to have an application to make it happen. Okay. So that's of course the version of Windows that I'm going to show you, because that's the version of Windows that is running on the Raspberry Pi 2 Windows 10 IoT Core. Final thing that I need to mention about that one is the fact that it's free. There is no license that you need to buy to be able to make use of it, even for commercial scenarios. So that's also pretty cool, I think. So let me switch into a demo. So I'm going to present once again my desktop. And let's switch to Visual Studio. And I'm going to build a very basic application that I'm going to deploy to my Raspberry Pi 2 that is running Windows 10 IoT Core. What do you need to do in Visual Studio? Well, you need to create a new universal Windows application, and I'm going to pick the blank application template that's available over there. For the people that have done Windows developments, this is not something new or something special. That's the same template that you would pick if you built an application for Windows 10. So it's not something special, let's say. So let's hit OK. Now, while this project is being created, I have to warn you a little bit that my design skills are not that great, so please don't judge me by the user interface that I'm about to create. I'm going to do something very basic, just opening up the main page of this application, add a little bit of XAML. Horizontal alignment, I'm going to set it to center, vertical alignment, also set it to center. And in that stack panel, I'm going to have a text block that says "Hello IoT World." Make sure the font size is, let's say, nice and big. What's going to happen when I click the little play button? Well, you know, this Windows application is going to be built and it's going to be deployed to my local machine. I'm just proving to you the point that, well, this is basically a Windows 10 application. See my fantastic user interface. The next thing that I would like to do is deploy this application to the Raspberry Pi 2 that I've got next to me that is running Windows 10 IoT Core. The Raspberry Pi 2 that I've got next to me, it's connected to the network. And I can look up the IP address and I can navigate actually to a built-in website that comes with Windows 10 IoT Core. If you just navigate to the IP address that your Raspberry Pi got on port 8080, you end up on this management interface. So you can see which applications are being deployed to the Raspberry Pi. You can see which processes are running. You can see the performance that that thing is having in terms of CPU usage and memory usage, and so forth. So this is the IP address of my Raspberry Pi. I'm going to copy it to the clipboard for a second. And now if I go to Visual Studio, what I can do is I can, well, say, first of all, I'm going to have a deployment for an ARM device, and it will be a remote machine that is running on this IP address without the HTTP, that is. And it's not going to make use of any authentication. Now, I'm going to try to do a little bit of a tricky thing. I'm going to enable my camera so I can actually show you the Raspberry Pi that is lying next to me. And I don't know, Louis, if you're still in the call, but can you confirm that you can see my camera?
We can see your camera.
Okay. See. Actually, I have to do it like this. The white box that I've got over here is a Raspberry Pi 2 connected to a small screen. If you boot up the Raspberry Pi, it will actually look something like this, where you can read the IP address, stuff like that. On my normal machine, I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio, click on the deploy button, and hopefully, if everything is okay, in a couple of seconds, you will see the same fantastic application that I got on my desktop running on the Raspberry Pi 2 as well. Usually taking a couple of seconds. Application is copied, it's being registered, so in a second it gets started on the Raspberry Pi 2. I hope you can still see my camera like this. Oops, not hold it in the light. If I hold it close, I hope you can actually read "Hello, IoT World." It's the same Windows application that was running on my machine. Now, this is of course not a very exciting demonstration. What I do want to show you as well is the following. Instead of using a text block, maybe I can have a quick button as well. And in that button, let's have it. Oops. Let's have a text block that says "Click me." Give that thing a nice name, TB font size, so you can read it. And when I click on the button, I'm going to call into an event handler. I'm going to do something very basic in that event handler in the code behind. to say textbox.txt is equal to I was clicked. Now, I hope you guys believe me that if I would deploy this application to my local machine, I would actually be able to use it. I'm going to deploy straight away to the Raspberry Pi. I'm deploying a new version of the application. So what's actually happening at this point in time, Visual Studio is setting up a remote debug session into the Raspberry Pi. So that's going to allow me to set, for example, a breakpoint over here. When the application is loaded, there it is. I see the fantastic button. Let me quickly check on link that I'm holding it somewhat correctly. And now if I click on this button, if I clicked on it, oh, I didn't click on it. There we go. So remember, the Raspberry Pi is connected to a network connection, so I'm remote debugging into the Raspberry Pi, which is actually a pretty cool scenario. It will be quite productive as a developer with these kind of capabilities. Now, of course, I do want to show you a bit of a real scenario as well. So let's get rid of the event handler and let's go back to the XAML. Let's get rid of the button, don't need it anymore. I do keep my stack panel, and I'm going to say that the orientation is horizontal. What's the scenario that I'm going to try to show you? Well, remember the IoT Camp website that we have, where we've got the chart that is displaying the live data. Well, I would like to show this live data in some nice graphics in a Windows 10 application. What I'm going to do is first I'm going to add some NuGet packages. What's the NuGet package that I'm going to get? There is actually a pretty nice GOG that's created by somebody from Belgium, by Dietrich Kroels. I'm going to add it to my project. And the second NuGet package that I'm going to add is the NuGet package for JSON, because I'm going to communicate with my backend by using JSON. So that's going to make it easy to convert that JSON into real values. So far so good. Let's go back to our XAML. Let's set the namespace for the GOG control. Now I can say that I've got maybe like two GOGs. To give them a fixed width and a fixed height to do some formatting. Let's give them a name as well. GOG1. Let's say the unit that we are going to display on this GOG is Y, the Y coordinates of our gyroscope. And if Visual Studio is catching up. There we go. I'm going to say the minimum value for the GOG is minus 10 and the maximum value is plus 10. That's the range where the gyroscope information, the gyroscope sensor information will actually come from. Thanks. Let me copy this one into GOG 2. And the second unit that I will be showing, my second GOG, I will call it RPS, for request per seconds. That is going to give me an ID how many people are actually using the service. So let's say the minimum is 0, the maximum 500, something like this. Of course, I need to write some codes behind the scenes, and the goal is, of course, that I write some codes that will connect to my Azure backend and get the latest sensor data. I'm going to make use of a puller mechanism, so let's quickly build a new dispatcher timer where we set the interval equal to a new time span that is going to allow us to grab the latest data maybe like every 500 milliseconds, every half second. When we've got a tick, we've got an event handler for that, and we are going to start the timer. So far, so good. Now I need to make use of, I think it's an HTTP client to connect to our backend. And with the HTTP client, I can say, well, get string async based off a URL. And the URL I'm quickly going to grab from my sample code. Let me show you what this URL is actually going to do. It's going to allow me to get the latest sensor value from my backend, and you can see the number of values that I captured in the latest second. If I refresh and you guys are still sending data, you can see that the value changes. This is a JSON that I get. Let's try to make use of it in my application. Asynchronous methods, so we need to await for it. And of course, we need to say this is an asynchronous method, where we're going to do that. Once we've got the JSON, I can make use of the JSON.NET library. Parse the JSON into a J object. Now I can say, well, GOG1.value is equal to my J object, the value. I need to get a double out of it. How did I do that? I may quickly cheat. Value into a double. Yes. And I'm going to get the number of values also as a double. Okay, so far so good. I think this might work. Just to be on the safe side, I'm going to run this on my local machine first. And for the guys that are in the call, feel free to navigate to the sensor demo page once again to send me some data. I will be doing that as well in my browser. So if, whoops. Did I make a mistake in grabbing the correct property name? Let me quickly check that. Number of values should be okay. What did I type? Ah, I forgot the S over here, just the number of values. So it's good that I checked on my local machine. Saved some time. Okay, see, there we go. We've got 5-6 requests per second that are currently coming in. And of course, the next thing that I can do is I can say, well, that's great. Let's deploy the same application once again to our Raspberry Pi that is running on Windows 10 IoT Core. I'm going to put this once again in front of my camera. Hope you guys will be able to see that. There's the application. And in a second, I will have the two core controls. And if everything goes okay, they should be displaying some data. Any second now. Yep. Yep, the data is coming in. We've got 10 requests per second that you guys are generating. Thanks, by the way, for contributing in this demonstration. Cool. So for a couple of things that that I wanted to show to you that you can do by making use of Windows 10 that is running, in this case, on the Raspberry Pi 2. Allow me to switch back to my presentation to finish off. Okay, so those were the things, as I said, that I wanted to discuss with you. I think now is the time, Louis, that we open up for questions. We still have like 10 minutes, I think, left for questions that you guys may have. I see that Louis has opened up the chat window. So if you have a question, feel free to type in your question in the chat window. Let me type, chat is here. So I see some people typing, that's cool. What's the version of Visual Studio required to start development on IoT? Well, good question. First of all, if you are building for a Windows 10 IoT core, you need to have at least Visual Studio 2015, so the latest version of Visual Studio. Which edition doesn't matter. So you can use Visual Studio Community Edition even, or if you go for the Enterprise Edition, it doesn't matter. But you need to have at least an edition of Visual Studio 2015. I see Thomas is still typing. It's a long question, apparently, Thomas, which is good. What is exactly the goal of Microsoft with Windows IoT in comparison, to Linux? What has it to offer more? Yeah, good question. Of course, our goal, first of all, is to be active in the devices space as well. We do think we've got a role to play with Windows 10 running on IoT devices. If you compare us to the competition, and if you would say, okay, Linux is the competition, I think we might have like a competitive advantage because, well, our platform is Windows. A lot of companies already know how to use Windows, how to manage Windows devices. And if it happens to be Windows 10 IoT devices, well, it's pretty much the same thing for them. Now, if you think about how we differentiate in terms of development capabilities with Linux running on the Raspberry Pi 2, it is indeed true that on Linux with the mono framework, you can run .NET code. I think the biggest differentiator would be if you have an application that is doing some user interface. If you know how to build Windows applications, you probably know that it's quite easy to build a pretty cool user interface by making use of XAML. And that same method, that same code, that same technology, you can now use to build a user interface for IoT devices, which is touch enabled, optimized for natural user input, that kind of stuff. So I would say if you have an application that you want to build and deploy on the Raspberry Pi 2, that has somewhat of a user interface, now Windows 10 is quite a good choice. So I hope I answered your question, Thomas, with that. Maybe there's another question. Okay, well, happy to be able to do that. Okay, some more people are typing, that's good. Probably mean there are some more questions. What would be a good starting point for a Windows developer to start off on IoT? Well, there's actually one place to go. It's windowsondevices.com. Let me type the URL in the chat windows as well. If you go there, you will end on the website with a big blue button that says Get Started. And over there, you can select on which device you would like to deploy Windows. It will guide you through some walkthroughs. It will explain to you with great detail what you need to do to get going. So if I would have to recommend one source, one place where you need to go to, well, that is the place where you can start. That's also the place where you can find the download of the image of Windows 10 that will run on the Raspberry Pi 2. Okay, what's the basic gear one would need to get started? Another good question. You're welcome, Thomas. What's the gear that you need? Well, obviously, you need to have a Raspberry Pi 2, which costs around 35 euros. In that Raspberry Pi 2, you need to put in a micro SD card for Windows 10, minimum or recommended at least 8 gigabytes of storage space. You need to give your Raspberry Pi 2 some power. It's powered by a micro USB cable, so if you've got a USB charger lying around, you can use that one. And for the rest, there are no real requirements. The screen that I showed you, it's nice to have, but you can, well, connect the Raspberry Pi to a normal monitor, to a normal screen as well, or you can connect it to a TV, something like that. So there are not a lot of requirements to get started. Just a Raspberry Pi 2 with an SD card, and you need to be able to give it some power. And a network connection. A network connection, of course, as well, but that's just, well, UTP cable that you plug into your router that you probably already have. When you are, going to explore a bit more, and you would like to connect some sensors, for example, to the Raspberry Pi 2 that's running on Windows 10, there's actually a pretty nice kit that's created by Adafruit. If you go to adafruit.com, you can find, I think it's called the Windows 10 IoT Starter Kit, that is including a bunch of sensors that you can use off on Windows 10, including with some sample code. So that's another very good starting point if you would like to buy some gear. Hope you enjoyed it, guys, and see you next time.